You are listening to the Horse Radio Network, part of the Equine Network family.
Welcome to this episode of the Daily Vet Life Podcast, where we chat with equine veterinarians about the cases they've worked on in their clinics. I'm your host, Alex Beckstedt, Editorial Director of Equimanagement, and today I'm speaking with Dr. Rana Bazorgmanesh about an anaphylaxis case she worked on recently. This episode of the Daily Vet Life Podcast is brought to you by DECRA. Dr. Rana Bazorgmanesh is an Associate Professor of Clinical Equine Internal Medicine at the University of California Davis School of Veterinary Medicine. Her focus is on equine internal medicine with a special interest in critical cases, including the critical broodmare and neonate. Thank you, Rana, for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Well, I'm excited to hear about this case, so let's just jump right in. Tell us a little bit about the case that you'll be sharing with us and how the patient first presented to you and your team there at UC Davis.
Yeah, so this is a super interesting and unusual case, and took us a little while to get our heads around what was going on. But essentially, it's a 16-year-old paint mare that is both a field or ambulatory client of the vet school, as well as, you know, coming in as needed into the hospital. And so our ambulatory team had originally gone out and vaccinated this mare on a Friday. And then she came into the hospital the next day because she had some colic signs that were initially treated out in the field, didn't get any better. And so she was referred into the hospital. So that's how she initially presented to us as a colic.
So when she first arrived, did you immediately start working it up and treating it like a colic? Or, I mean, yeah. Was there anything else to suggest otherwise?
So actually our emergency surgery service admits all the colics in our institution. And so because she was presenting as a colic, they admitted her as a colic and did their routine colic workup that includes nasogastric intubation, you know, ultrasound, belly tap, physical exam, abdominal x-rays, all of the above. And then there was nothing really crazy obvious as far as the colic workup goes, but the blood work was what was really interesting. And it was 1 a.m. And so we're limited on what blood work we can run at that time. But her PCV was 77, which is crazy high. You know, normal is in the 30s typically. Oh, wow. And so she had this crazy high PCV, which we don't often see in any cases that high. And so they started treating her and trying to kind of figure out what was going on. The other interesting thing was she was azotemic, so her creatinine was a little high at that point too. And, you know, they treated her for, you know, symptomatically for her colic signs and with fluid therapy. And then once they figured out that it wasn't really a true colic, the case was transferred to my internal medicine service team.
Got it. So then what steps did your team pursue, having armed with all that information and test results?
Yeah, so we were able then to perform a full CBC and biochemistry, you know, during daylight hours. And essentially, you know, other than what we call polycythemia, which is the super high PCV or hematocrit, and slightly low platelets, and the creatinine being high, there was nothing too crazy on the blood work. The other interesting thing was that this mare has a history of having these mild vaccine reactions. And so our field service veterinarian had checked a creatinine at the time of vaccination, and it was normal. It was like low normal. She gave a dose of Banamine after the vaccine because typically that kind of prevents the mare from having a fever or anything that she normally would do post-vaccination. So anyway, at the time of transfer to us, we had the full blood work. We had our specialty service ultrasound the kidneys and urinary tract to try and figure out if there was any kind of anatomical or obvious abnormalities of the kidneys or urinary tract causing the azotemia. We also did a urinalysis, kind of just really honed in on the urinary tract to try and figure out where the azotemia was from. Because we were pretty confident that we had corrected any dehydration with fluid therapy. Now, interestingly, the hematocrit or PCV, you know, never really got down with fluid therapy a significant amount. I mean, it did, it got down to the 60s, eventually to the 50s, but it was still significantly higher than what we would consider normal. And the creatinine was continuing to rise despite fluid therapy. So we, you know, were starting to think about different differentials potentially for polycythemia and whether it's primary or secondary. Primary would be kind of potentially a neoplastic condition of the bone marrow that is causing the bone marrow to churn out more red blood cells, even though they're not needed. And then secondary would be, you know, for reasons like, you know, low oxygen levels or high altitude or in humans, chronic smoking, et cetera. And so in this case, we were like, there's no obvious inciting cause for this polycythemia. Like, why is this happening? And so that we kind of that then focused on further investigation into that specifically.
Calling all equine veterinarians. Are you tired of feeling like you're on an island when it comes to caring for your patients? Dechra Veterinary Products is here to bridge that gap. They understand the challenges you face. That's why they offer a comprehensive line of high-quality products like Zycosan and Osphos, and empower you to offer your patients cutting-edge therapies like ProVet APC. They're not just a supplier, though. Dechra provides ongoing training and support to help you stay ahead of the curve and deliver the best possible care. Visit www.dechra-us.com to discover how Dechra can be your partner in equine health. So what did you hone in on from there?
So from there, we were really, you know, the only way that we were going to figure out whether the polycythemia was primary or not was to do a bone marrow aspirate. And so we ended up doing a bone marrow aspirate, which confirmed no cancer, so no neoplasia, but it confirmed a primary polycythemia. So the bone marrow was churning out red blood cells, even though it didn't need to. And then we were reasonably convinced at this point that all of this was secondary to the vaccine because of, you know, the timeline, but it's not typically seen as, you know, we won't see reports of this as a typical vaccine reaction.
Right.
So we did a lot of looking through the literature and trying to figure things out as to, has this been reported? Has it ever been seen before? Speaking to drug companies, et cetera. And it really hasn't. There is one extremely old paper where they induce anaphylaxis in a bunch of horses. And one of the effects of that they did see was polycythemia. So the hematocrit rose by 40 in some of these horses. This is just this one paper that shows that. And so we kind of were like, okay, maybe that's what we have going on here. Maybe this is an anaphylaxis thing. And the other question we had to answer was, why is the horse azotemic? Like, why are the kidneys unhappy? And we were able to explain that by hyperviscosity syndrome, which that is reported in people. And essentially the blood is so viscous because there is so many red blood cells in there that it upsets that. Like, I always say the kidneys are like the princesses of the body. They don't like too much blood pressure. They don't like too little blood pressure. They don't like, you know, they're very, very particular about how they're treated. And so if the blood is too viscous, that will upset them as well. And so that was kind of our working diagnosis: polycythemia secondary to anaphylaxis with a secondary azotemia as a result of hyperviscosity syndrome.
So how did you treat this mare to get this condition under control?
Yeah, so that's a really good question. We pondered a lot about how would we best to treat her. You know, really tough, because this is not, again, not a classic case, not one we see all the time, not one you can look in a textbook and say, this is how you would treat this case. So we had to kind of think outside the box a little bit. And so one of the mainstays of treatment for us was we wanted to dampen down the histamine response. So with anaphylaxis, histamine drives a lot of the inflammation, et cetera, going on in the body. And so we used hydroxyzine, which is an antihistamine, but also added an H2 blocker as well, which you typically use for stomach ulcers, but we wanted to suppress all of the histamine as much as possible. And then we pondered steroids. So how do you typically treat anaphylaxis? Or how do you treat severe inflammation? Usually steroids. But this mare was a chunky, chunky girl. And we really, really worry about steroid-induced laminitis in horses, particularly if they're chunky. We kind of shied away from steroids with her. But we were like, okay, how do you rapidly get the red blood cell count down? Well, there's only one real way to do that. Like, you know, we tried flooding her with IV fluids and that wasn't helping. In fact, the creatinine was climbing. There's one way to decrease red blood cell count and one way that they treat polycythemia in humans with essentially bloodletting. And so we removed 8 liters of blood from her.
Wow.
Via a catheter, you know, we did it all in a sterile fashion. And we did it slowly because you don't want to remove a large volume of any sort of fluid from a horse rapidly. But so we removed the blood while we were giving crystalloid IV fluids at the same time. We did 5 liters and then gave her a bit of a break and then did another 3 liters. In humans, they typically do 10% of your blood volume when they do this. But we went a little bit higher because her polycythemia was so severe. And the other thing that we considered was you can typically decide whether you want to give the plasma back. So you'll remove whole blood and you can give plasma back so that you don't drop their proteins too much. And in humans, because with cases of polycythemia, if it's neoplastic anyway, you're having to repeat the bloodletting every so often. And in those cases, because you're doing it so often, you give the plasma back so that you don't take all their proteins away. In this case with her, we decided as it was, we were hoping going to be a one-off and not a chronic condition. We just removed the blood and just gave crystalloid fluids back and did not give her plasma back. And it was honestly miraculous after that. Yeah, with it, you know, her the next day her creatinine was coming down, her hematocrit came down nicely, and you know, she did great. One other thing that I forgot to mention was because of the increased viscosity of blood, we were worried about potential hypercoagulability, and so we did put her on clopidogrel and anticoagulant as well. Mm-hmm. But yeah, she was a super interesting case, and you know, great owners. One of the owners, actually, it was a couple. The husband is a human physician, and so he was very understanding and understood that we were at least initially not entirely sure what was going on, and we were doing all this investigation and understanding that we needed to rule out a bunch of things before we embarked on, you know, removing 8 liters of blood,
right?
Or whatever else. Yeah, yeah.
So what was the whole timeline from when she was admitted to kind of getting this under control?
So that's a good question. It was about a week. Like it took that long. You know, we did several days of fluid therapy. We did, you know, it just took a little while. I said that the owners were great, but they didn't want to jump to bone marrow aspiration on day two. Like that took a little bit of persuasion of us being like, look, there's nothing else obvious here. This is what we think, but we need to do these things. And so they wanted us to try everything before doing the more invasive stuff and before, you know, coming to the conclusion that we needed to bleed or remove 8 liters of blood.
Right.
So it was about a week. you know, of hospitalization. And then she went to our layup facility, CEH. And there we just continued to monitor her and make sure that her blood work stayed okay and she stayed in good shape.
Yeah. So will she need any special management considerations going forward? I mean, do you guys feel like you need to take precautions during vaccinations?
That is a really, really good question. And so I wanted to stress that this would not be, in general, a reason for me to like not want to vaccinate horses in general, because the risks of getting a West Nile virus infection or tetanus or anything else outweighs by a million, you know, the chances of something like this happening. So particularly for owners, I would never want them to be anti-vaccination because of a case like this. With this specific mare, we opted to check titers and if for various diseases that we would be vaccinating for. And if titers were adequate, then not vaccinate, because, you know, she would have enough circulating antibodies to be protective. And if titers were not adequate, then the owners opted to hospitalize her for vaccination and monitoring thereafter. Yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
So just because I'm curious personally, why do you think she initially presented with those colic signs? Do you think that was just a coincidental thing?
That's also a really good question. Horses, unlike other species, horses' shock organs are slightly different. And so colic is a common sign of anaphylaxis in horses because they get so much inflammation in their gut. They get edema, they'll get ileus, and they will often colic as a sign of anaphylaxis. You know, they can do all the other stuff like respiratory distress, hives, etc. But as we all know, horses like to colic no matter what's wrong with them. Like that's their go-to. And so she was colicking, but her primary issue was not gastrointestinal. It was anaphylaxis.
Yeah. Fascinating. Do you have any advice for veterinarians that are facing similarly confounding cases like this? I mean, it just seems such a rare incidence to be dealt.
Yeah. I mean, I think like at Davis, we see a lot of these cases that are just really, really tricky and have had an extensive workup previously even, and then come to us because, you know, we're lucky that we can do advanced testing and do things a little bit outside of the box with our capabilities at the hospital. I think, you know, having a really systematic approach and going back to the basics, like we literally would have a textbook out and being like, what are the causes of polycythemia here? And like, these are primary causes. Does she have any of these, or how can we rule these out? These are secondary causes. Does she, you know, is she a smoker? No, like, you know, literally going back to basics and then ruling things out. And then, you know, yes, it ends up being a diagnosis of exclusion because you can't prove cause and effect. But essentially, once you reach a point where you're like, you know, this is something super invasive and unusual, but it's the only thing we've got left to try, then, you know, I think you can feel more confident in taking that step.
Right. Well, is there anything else that you want to share with our audience about this particular case?
Well, this case is she's from September. She initially came in September 2024. And so we're a ways out and she's doing great. She's never had other complications associated with this. And I think, you know, another thing that I would say to people is like, don't give up, you know, if able, horses humble us, you know, all the time. And so when finances allow, we do a lot of kind of fundraising and using teaching funds, doing as much as we can when funds don't allow. But yeah, I think this is kind of an example of not giving up, because there wasn't a clear explanation, but we kind of were able to save her despite that.
Well, that's fantastic to hear that it's been a year or two and she's still doing great.
Yeah, she's doing great.
Well, thank you, Rana, for joining us today and sharing this case with us. It certainly was fascinating.
Yeah, it's a very different case that you don't often hear or don't ever hear about something like it.
Right. Well, also, thank you to our listeners for tuning in, and thank you to our sponsor, DECRA.